Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. If there's one story that's fascinated humans throughout time, it's the origin story. Who are we? Where did we come from? How did we get here? What's our purpose? And where are we going? Every culture has its own mythology, its own creation story. But in today's show, we're going to be discussing a lost mythology that has reawakened to unite the mosaic of individual stories into a singular narrative. It's a bold, new, and at the same time ancient story that has recently been brought to light in part one of a three-part documentary series that is currently lighting up the internet. My guest is master storyteller, writer, producer, director, and narrator of The Story of Everything, a new and ancient mythology of humanity revealed, which lays out point by extraordinary point an alternative history of humanity that stretches far outside the history books. Betsy Paul, welcome.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
Betsy, part one of your documentary, A Story of Everything, A New and Ancient Mythology of Humanity Revealed, invites viewers into the story room, a place where hundreds of guests, including many famous authors, thought leaders, physicists, and indigenous elders have gathered over the past 8 years, and which I too had the privilege of entering in 2016 when I visited Damanhur, the renowned spiritual eco-community in northern Italy. Let's start by talking about the story behind the story of everything, the inspiration or the calling, as you describe it in the movie, that was the beginning of this journey for you.
Gosh, thank you for that intro. In 2003, I lost my mother. My mother passed away. And right after that, I started to have this completely non-pragmatic intuition that my family and I, we lived in Los Angeles, that we were supposed to in some way move to Italy. And there was no, I mean, we didn't have family there. We weren't Italian. But I had this strong feeling we were supposed to move to Italy. And so I had a tiny inheritance, and I didn't want to invest it in the stock market or other instruments. And so I said to my husband, you can't argue with this. I don't know why, but we have to buy a house in Italy. And he's sort of used to my crazy ideas that turn out to have some meaning. And so we started this journey to find a house in Italy. Well, that journey turned out to, in fact, be a calling. And that calling was to a place called the Federation of Dominor. And Sandy, you've visited here, so you have some sense of the both profound and complex nature of this community. But this calling that I had seemed to be this calling to come here. And over the course of the next few years, I arrived here having no idea why. And it very soon became clear that I was called here because I'm a storyteller. And there was this extraordinary story that was locked in the esoteric archive here. And the time had come for that story needing to be told. And at the time I arrived, the spiritual founder of the community, Falco, was still alive. And we ended up launching a project to start to try to communicate Dominor to the world in a clearer and more cohesive way.
So you have said that Falco was not your average man. You refer to him as a brilliant avatar who brought a knowledge that had previously not been available. an esoteric archive, if you like. Tell us a little bit about Falco so that people can get the context of this.
So Falco was the visionary who, in fact, founded this alternative community, a community of about 600 highly individualistic people who came together to realize a dream. And Falco always said that a dream becomes reality when enough people are able to see themselves reflected in that dream to know that it can't be accomplished without them. And so this extraordinary community was built. And over 40 years, Falco was both the spiritual founder and the teacher to this community. And over 40 years, in fragments here and there, he began to share his memories of the history of humanity and of his many lifetimes and his greater mission around this idea that humanity has the potential to be reawakened. So when I began this media project for the community and started to actually do an intellectual property evaluation, I kept finding fragments of this story, but they had never been assembled into something that could be recounted in a clear and cohesive way. And so that became my mission, to assemble this story into something that could be transmitted in a way that it could be a catalyst for others.
At what point did you have this kind of, you know, epiphany of what it was that you were putting together? I mean, it must have been a, you know, a moment, I would think.
There was definitely a moment, and this is an initiatic school. This is a mystery school, and I am an initiate in this mystery path, and there are certain meditative practices that we do. And it was in the middle of one of those meditative practices that I had this out-of-body, out-of-time vision, and it was a metaphor, but the vision was of actually sitting on the edge of a galactic sandbox, and all of creation was in that sandbox, and I was sitting on one side of it, and Falco was sitting on the side next to me, and we were laughing. And we made this agreement, and his part of the agreement was to come to this planet Earth to create and tell a story. And behind him were all of the souls of the Dominorians, the people who would come to build and create this story. And behind me were all of the storytellers who would come to the planet to tell the story. And so that was the agreement. He would come to create the story. I would come to tell the story. That was the epiphany for me when I realized that was why I had been called to this extraordinary community.
What gave you the idea to create a physical story then?
I'm, in fact, a filmmaker. That was what I had done before I came here. And I had always, in my work as a screenwriter, been a great outliner. So I might take months or a couple of years to outline a story, story point by story point, before I would ever start to write it. And I would use a program that looked like index cards. And so the idea came to me to actually create a physical space where, as I was finding pieces of these story, I could start to lay them out on colored index cards with color-coded thumbtacks that could give us a visual representation of the mountaintops of this story. So you've been to the story room, and you'll see that each of these index cards is a story point. Mm-hmm. But within the esoteric archive, there's a depth of content behind each of those story points. And in this film, I take the audience through the experience of the transmission of this greater story, story point by story point. And there's it's not a linear story. So the idea was that it would be in a room that surrounds you. You would be surrounded by the story. And we jump from time period to time period in this. And so this ability to recount this in some way required a physical space where people could come together in.
Jean Houston was one of the people who came to the story room. And for those who aren't familiar with Jean, and I can't imagine there are many, but in case there are some, she's a renowned leader in the human potential movement. And she said to you that she believed the story represented on the walls of the story room may well be the core mythology of humanity, representing global consciousness that her dear friend, the mythologist Joseph Campbell, had predicted the emergence of 40 years ago. That must have been quite a moment for you too, you know, to have that kind of, you know, validation.
Yes. I mean, Jean and I actually spent many hours in conversation about this. And she was with me for about 4 hours in the story room. And as you said, she related that she felt that this could be, you know, the mythology that her dear friend Joe, as she referred to him, had predicted the emergence of. But she also said to me, she cautioned me, she said, Betsy, the thing about this is that this story probably falls outside of the worldview of 90% of the people on the planet right now. And you now need to connect with physicists, cosmologists, and researchers who are working on the frontiers of the consciousness movement. Because while this story falls outside of many people's worldview, there is, in fact, within that group of scientific minds, support for this kind of story. And that led me to actually begin to work very closely with Irvin Laszlo, who had created something called the Laszlo Institute of New Paradigm Research. And Irvin was catalyzing many of these frontier physicists and thinkers into small symposiums. And we started to go to another part of Italy, Bagno di Luca in Tuscany, for these think tanks with some of these great minds. And I also began to interview them, because what I was hearing there was so, I felt was so important to be able to share in a cohesive way. And so in service to the time when it would be possible to share the story room with a bigger audience, I also began to speak with people like Raymond Moody, Eben Alexander, Stuart Hameroff, people who were working in this realm of non-localized consciousness, really great minds, and also inviting them to the story room. So there's a point in part three of this story when we're speaking about a new timeline in which I had one of the leading researchers into electromagnetic energy. And as I'm telling this story to this very accomplished scientist, I'm thinking, he's either going to just think I'm so full of crap at this point. But when I finished, he said to me, you know, Betsy, this is completely consistent with our current research. So validating what Jean had said to me in terms of needing to speak to these people who were working on the frontiers of the consciousness movement from a scientific perspective.
Wow. So at what point did you decide that you were going to make this a film? I mean, was that always part of the plan, or did it emerge later?
The original vision of this was, in fact, to turn this bigger story into a massively multiplayer online game world where the audience experience would be to actually physically be in a place where their own memories could be reawakened. And of course, that had a very, very high price tag. And so for many years, the transmission of the story room happened with people physically coming into the story room. And at a certain point, I also work with a group of non-terrestrial intelligences that both my production partner and I had opened to us. This was a group that I had contact with as a child. And they said to me, you must make this knowledge now available for more of humanity. And they gave us specific numbers that we had to reach 6 million people within a certain period of time. And so it really, we began to be pushed by these non-terrestrial intelligences that we were channeling that, you know, we needed to actually create a version of this that could go into the world where people didn't have to come to the story room. It could come to them.
So tell me, if you can, a little overview of the story.
So the story begins, in fact, with a short lesson in what we in our community call esoteric or spiritual physics. So we speak about how the universe of form that we live in was created. And then we take you into an intelligence that enters that world of form and fragments into everything. And we go through what created this idea of duality in the world. Then we actually go through galactic civilization, highly advanced galactic civilization, when and why the Earth itself was settled, why the Earth was important, a contamination that happens by the opposing forces at a certain point, the battles that are set up by that, the pejorative effects of those battles, the rise and fall of great civilizations that predate any of our ancient histories in the history books, civilizations like Mu and Atlantis. And this story takes us up through the final, this part one, takes us up through the final destruction of Atlantis. And there are very specific dates that are throughout this history that were conveyed by Falco in his teachings.
So this is a story of the colonization of Earth. You know, that, and that's something that is going to interest most people watching it. I mean, most people here on Earth watching it are going to want to, you know, be interested in that part as well as the rest of it, of course. But can you tell us a little bit about these colonizations of Earth? Who was colonizing Earth and when?
So we're speaking, we go back to, it's not as linear as in this year these colonizations began, also because on a galactic level, time is running differently than on a terrestrial level. Mm-hmm. But we are speaking about five star empires. So five diverse star empires that were each their own political, cultural, a star empire is not a single planet, it's a collective. And there were five highly evolved quadrants of the galaxy that at a certain point, the Earth became accessible to. And so there was an initial colonization agreement that allowed those civilizations to come here and mine the Earth for resources. The stargates were not opening and closing on a dependable level. And so there was not significant civilization established here because the connection between the star empires couldn't be maintained between the opening and closing of the stargates. So throughout this history, at different points, access to the Earth changes. There's a second colonization agreement that happens. And that leads to the rise of civilizations like Mu, spiritually advanced civilizations. And then on a galactic level, there are a series of Star Wars type battles that happen before the opening of what we call synchronic lines, which make the Earth, in fact, now in proximity in terms of travel to the first star empire, which has, after all of this story and battles, become the controlling star empire of this particular planet. So that's this is a very brief condensation of some of the story that we're going through.
Explain just a little bit about synchronic lines, because they have nothing to do with ley lines, as most people would imagine.
Correct. No, the synchronic lines are, in fact, the channels of energy. So if you see a map of the synchronic lines, they're not geometric. They swirl and curve and, you know, circle. They're both horizontal and vertical, but they're very windy. These are the channels of energy on which life force travels. So these are the channels of energy on which we incarnate and disincarnate. They're the channels of energy on which dreams travel, thoughts travel, and the synchronic lines connect at the poles and run off into the galaxy, and they connect all of the planets in the galaxy that host life force. So they really are the channels of energy on which life force can travel.
Wow. I'm going to take a break now, and I can't wait to hear more when we return, Betsy. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest today is Betsy Paul, who is a filmmaker and the storyteller, writer, producer, director, and narrator of an astonishing documentary movie called The Story of Everything, A New and Ancient Mythology of Humanity Revealed. We'll be back with more from Betsy Paul after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
Mental health. Most people think it means mental illness. Most people are wrong. Mental health doesn't apply to just some of us. It applies to everyone. We're all susceptible to anxiety and depression. They're human conditions. And no person should ever feel embarrassed, ashamed, or be discriminated against for being human. Cracked the Podcast strips away the shame, fear, and stigma by expanding the conversation into areas less often visited. From brain and body chemistry, hormones, food, nutrition, trauma, and the microbiome, to pharmaceutical drugs, psychedelic substances, meditation, visionary experiences, and spiritual awakenings. Cracked the Podcast will explore them all, including the notion that, for many, breakdown can be the beginning of breakthrough. For in the words of singer-songwriter Leonard Cohen, there is a crack in everything. It's where the light gets in. Cracked the Podcast, slaying the dragons of mental health. Join co-hosts Sandy Sedgbeer and Rebecca Shaper on the first and third Thursday of every month at 12 noon Eastern Time.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back. Betsy Paul, the premiere screening of the film was hosted just a week or so ago by American philosopher and celebrated author Charles Eisenstein. What has been the reaction? I mean, from what I've seen, people are telling each other about it. It's very much a kind of grassroots explosion in a way. Is this what you're experiencing?
In fact, we had that night about 2,000 people who tuned in. And it was very important to us in terms of how we released this film because of the sensitive nature of the material and the fact that it could be considered to be highly controversial, that it actually be hosted in a place that had a community where it could land softly. So a community of people who are conscious of the fact that our story is potentially larger than what we've had access to. And Charles, in fact, had been here and had participated in one of the incubators that I had held in 2015 and 16 to invite other storytellers into the space to contemplate how we could, in fact, bring this story to the world in a way that it could be accessible. And so Charles had, in fact, created a platform called the New and Ancient Story Platform, which seemed synchronically like the perfect place to initially introduce the story.
Well, I've been hearing about it from a number of people. And when you start getting lots of emails saying, hey, have you seen this? You know, you've got to pay attention. This, when the movie opens up, there's a phrase that appears, and it is a very poignant and very powerful phrase. I want you to explain it to me. Love is more than we remember it.
It's interesting. So the journey around the work with the story room, and whenever I would invite a group of people to come, people would synchronically contact me wanting to come at the same time. And my guides had said, you won't produce this in the same way. People will arrive at the right time. And when you have 12 people, you know you have an incubator. And so each time I would have a collective, always these issues around love and sexuality and relationship would come to the surface. And in fact, in my own life journey, after being with my husband for 33 years, my partner who entered this work, who turned out to be my twin flame, which was not something that was part of my cosmology, but entered with the ability to help realize this work, actually put me on a personal journey around what love is. And I've come to believe that love is not an emotion. It's not something. I believe that it's in fact the connecting tissue between everything. And when we're able to start to tap into that, the limitations that we put on love start to evaporate. And this journey for me, for my husband, for my other partner, was synchronically guided by my invitation as an activist to go to another community called Tamara and be part of something called Global Love School. So in so many ways, all of this was catalyzed by the story room work. And the work that we do in Global Love School, which actually invites a number of global activists and movement leaders who agree to come together each year for 2 weeks. And we work on the issues around love, sexual intimacy, and relationship. And so I found, in terms of my journey to bring this work to the world, this story of love and sexual intimacy ended up having a very, very big part in the realization of this story.
Explain that a bit more to me, because, you know, the little that we've heard so far, you talk about these five collectives. We also talk about people being in charge of certain places. And this sounds as though there's an element of control there. What does control have to do with love?
I don't think that control has anything to do with love. I think that, in fact, fear is the opposite of love. And part of our journey right now as humanity is to learn how to build what we call fields of trust, where people can authentically express who they are and what they desire, especially on a level of sexual intimacy, and have it be met not by judgment and fear and jealousy, but have it be met by curiosity and the ability to, in fact, be self-expression, to have self-expression in the most authentic possible way. So that's been the sort of backstory that's been happening behind the story of The Story of Everything. And in fact, we have a second documentary in production that's called Bring Back Eros, which is bringing that backstory into a public forum.
Now, that is something that is very much needed.
I think that at the root of all of the violence on the planet, we can unravel that and find that at the root is in some way repressed sexual energy. It's part of the life force. It's the thing that connects all of us. And yet it's the thing that we're least likely to address in any kind of a public way. The things that we keep most private and intimate are the things that actually connect us as humanity in the most profound way.
Do you think we're ready for this now? I mean, we need it now, but are we ready for it?
I think that it's very interesting. Our Falco, the spiritual founder of our community, in fact, had said to Dominor, we've got to start putting what we've created here into the world, even though it's not complete, it's not finished, it's not even fully functioning on every level that it should. But we can't wait until it's perfect. We need to put it into the world now because it's needed now. So maybe the world's not ready for this yet, and yet it's absolutely critical that it start to be part of the conversation.
Well, it has to, and it already is part of the conversation. I mean, we're seeing it all around us. But that conversation needs to broaden. And, you know, more and more people need to join that conversation. Tell me about the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity that you have, you're part of, have co-founded.
Right. So in the context of actually doing this work, we wanted to create a container where there would be the possibility to have the knowledge of others come in to support or challenge or in some way create an environment where there could be discourse and verification or not of this story. This story was related by Falco, Oberto Araudi was his anagraphic name, the founder of this community. But my desire is to have others who have different experience come in. I've had one man who was a Vedic expert who came through the story room and said that this story was completely consistent with his understanding of the Vedas, for example. I would love to have people like Graham Hancock or Michael Tellinger who have experience with the physicality of antediluvian ruins to hear the dates and hear the chronology and see if it has resonance with their work. We don't feel like we have the truth in our pocket here in Dahmenor. We are a research community. And so part of that research is being open to the knowledge of others. And I'm hoping, and the intent of putting this into the world is to catalyze the collaboration with others who carry parts of this story.
I've spoken to a couple of people who've seen the documentary who felt a deep resonance with this story. I mean, you said, you know, you're not saying that it's the complete story, the true story, who knows? But many people, I would imagine, will feel a resonance with this.
I know that over the course of the past 8 years, I've had probably around 300 people come through the physical story room. And I think I only had two people who ran screaming from the room because it was just too much for them. But the other 298, all of them said to me that in some way this story had this resonance deep inside of them, and they felt their worldview shifting because of having, in fact, experienced the story room. So that's my hope in putting this big story into the world, is that it can be a small pebble in the lake of consciousness that can create a ripple effect that will in some way catalyze this shifting consciousness that we're experiencing right now.
You've shared a little of the second documentary in this series. What about the third one?
So the third part in this documentary actually zooms in to look at the community of Dahmenor. And Dahmenor, I have described as Hogwarts for adults at times. But Dahmenor is, in fact, a thergic community, meaning a community that's doing work in one dimension to affect change that's originating in another dimension. And the third part of the story room, which when you came to see actually didn't exist yet, but the third part actually takes us through all of the thergic or magical missions that have been instigated or initiated by Dahmenor over its 40-year history. So it's a very complex piece, that third part.
Sounds it. When are you going to release part two and part three?
Well, we have in fact shot and have an edited version of part two and part three, but my community, when they saw the quality of the part one, asked if they could in fact participate in the production of part two and part three by providing me with deeper access and also the ability to interview people who have physically been part of some of those magical missions. And this was something that I had always wanted to do and to include. And so that access and the ability to not just have my own voice in this, but to also share the voice of people who have been actually engaged and invested in these missions over the years. And these are not small missions. These are in fact missions that have had an impact, I believe, on every human on this planet. And so the revealing of that work will potentially be quite controversial and at the same time could be quite illuminating.
This is such an exciting project. I would imagine that, you know, having seen the movie, many people will say, hey, I want to come and help you. I want to be one of your researchers. I want to know more about this story before the rest of the world gets to know about it.
We are completely open to that. And I hope that that happens. And I also would put out the plea. We've created this part one with no financial resources and no assistance from anywhere. And in order for us to do the next segments of shooting for part two and part three, we've created a Patreon campaign where people can contribute to bringing this to the world more rapidly. So I hope we can share the link to that. And it is one way that people can participate from wherever they are by letting us know that they do want to see part two and part three.
Well, and they can participate in, you know, the costs of producing those by paying to watch part one, which you've just, where is it? It's uploaded on Vimeo, and it's just I mean, pennies really to watch.
Right. No, we've tried to make it very affordable for people, and it's available both on Vimeo and also on Real House, which are two VOD, video on demand sites. And for the cost of a cup of coffee, you can have access to this story. So I hope that that won't be a barrier for people to actually engage in this work in a significant way.
What other ways can people engage? I mean, you talked about the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity, and you've also founded the Advancement of Consciousness, an organization
for
the advancements.
Right.
Wake Up, yes.
Wake Up, yes. The Association for the Advancement of Consciousness, yes.
Yeah, I mean, are these, you know, organizations that people can join and participate in?
They are organizations that the Institute is not a legal entity, but the Wake Up, the Association for the Advancement of Consciousness, which is based in Klagenfurt, Austria, where my other partner is in fact an organization that people can join and be a part of. There's also, in the story, I relate aspects of how humanity has been impacted in the loss of certain senses and archetypes. And here in Dahmenor, we have an open university where people can, in fact, study some of these subjects. And these are somewhat unconventional courses, but we have courses here in things like past life research, astral travel, the awakening of the inner senses. I believe, Sandy, you've actually been involved in some of the courses here. So firsthand experience of that.
Yeah, very powerful, very different than one might expect. Past life, you know, Dahmenor does past life research in a completely different way. And personally, I prefer it. I've done the Inner Senses courses. I've done several of your courses, and I find them very powerful, very profound.
And I should let people know that during lockdown, because usually you would have to be physically present here in Dahmenor to participate in our open university, but during lockdown, what we were putting our energy into was actually creating online versions of the classes and giving access to this knowledge and these classes via an online platform. So whereas in the past that would have been unthinkable, we've had to adapt and adjust. And in this new world, they will be much more available on a global level now.
Now there's a new portal of Dahmenor's Path of Initiation called Oroma. Tell me a little bit about that.
So Oroma, which means gold and story, is a place where the magical work, the missions of Dahmenor that are contemporary will be shared. So, for example, right now, one of the global missions that we're engaged in is the settlement of what we call the energy of Pan. So Pan is this energy of the volcanoes, of the earth energy. And we have put a call out for people to answer this call from the earth. And you can go onto the Oroma site and find out how you can directly participate in those magical missions. Also, the spiritual school in Dahmenor, the Dahmenor School of Meditation, which we now call the School of Meta-Action, is now widely available to anyone in the world who feels this resonance and this call and wants to participate in this ancient initiation and mystery school.
Now, you talked about your hope for this documentary series. Have you had, you and Edgar, your partner, I mean, you're both channels and mediums. There's an awful lot of channels at Damanhur, and Falco himself has, you know, shared an awful lot of information. Do you actually have any evidence that this is going to change the world?
My hope is that this will be a catalyst in the world. And the group that we channel have said to us personally that in our lives, we will begin to think of our lives as the time before the release of the story room and the time after the release of the story room. So that's a sort of big thing for them to share with us. But we as channels and mediums, and this opened up after we met for both of us, at a point when I had become discouraged with doing the work in the story room and had decided to take a break and go back to producing conventional films at a business residency, I had a dream that I had created the story room and was inviting these famous authors and people through it. And the next morning after that dream, this man who had been a stranger to me met me at the bottom of the stairs of the hotel with a 5-page message. He wasn't a channel, but that night he'd been up channeling all night. And he said to me, "I think this is a message for you." And it was a message about the necessity to help to reawaken the original blueprint of humanity and why we're here now. And the message introduced him to me as my partner in this and said there would be more information if we agreed to work together, which we must do by the end of that month. And when we did that, this group began to communicate with us on a regular basis. And beyond that, also this ability to tune in to the field or frequency of the people around us opened. And so we began to also work with others. And really what comes through us is the ability to connect with the higher self of the people that we do readings for and to connect into why you've come here at this very particular point in the history of humanity now. And to help people to connect to what their higher self agreed on in terms of coming here.
You've said that from childhood, you've had contact with non-terrestrial intelligences, and that silenced when you entered adulthood. So did that contact open up for you again when you met your twin flame, Edgar, or before that?
No, that's exactly what happened. As a child, I was a kind of odd kid. I had this sense of a vast universe. But I would also sit in the chair watching television, look at the wall, and know that it was just vibrating frequencies and that I could walk through the wall. And I had a non-terrestrial being who was there, present for me it was both a psychic, but also a feeling of physicality, who would say to me, "No, you can't do that sort of behavior in this lifetime. That will separate you. And you need to be part of the flow of humanity." And so I had this sense of this being who was there guiding me in terms of how to behave as a human being. And I also had the experience of, I had abduction experience as a child as well by a group of other entities. And every time that would happen, I would be thinking to them, "Why are you doing this? I'm not who you think I am. I'm not a normal human." And at a certain point, the being that had been guiding me through this journey of becoming human came to me and put in my hand a green powder and communicated to me that when I ingested that green powder, these other visitations would stop. And that's, in fact, what happened. And so after that, I didn't have significant contact any longer with the sort of guardian that had been with me through my childhood. When this connection happened with Edgar, I had remembered all this doing regression therapy with a woman called Afton Blake in California. But every time she would regress me, it wouldn't be to past lives. I would be galactic and having interactions on a galactic level. And I had seen myself there. And in the meeting with Edgar, when I asked him to find out who he was channeling, they brought up that experience of my work under hypnosis and said, "We are the group that was with you then and in childhood." And I hadn't shared any of that with him. So that's how that reopened again.
What do you know about that group?
What I know about that group is that there are 24 of us. We are a group soul. We come from a planet that was destroyed and have been on a craft. And in that craft, there are 12 stasis chambers. And those 12 stasis chambers contain the full being that I am, that Edgar is, that the other 10 who are incarnate are. And in this biology, we are actually incarnating an aspect of the consciousness of those beings. And they are much more highly evolved beings who are part of this collective. And the group soul can be both physical beings and also etheric. And we're channeling them when they're in the etheric. And so it's a combination of our higher selves who are part of that collective of 24. And that's what we tune into when we're channeling.
Wow. Would you like to share with our audience again the details of where people can connect with you, find out more about you, and also support your Patreon campaign?
So our Patreon campaign is called The Story of Everything. So I believe if you search for that, and maybe that will also be in the information below this broadcast, you'll find our Patreon campaign. Edgar and I do readings for people individually and also do collective channelings. And you can find us at edgarandbetsy.com. And in terms of the support and, you know, reaching out to me, I am always open to people who are looking and searching for bigger answers in their life. And so I would love to connect to your listeners in any way that I'm able to support and catalyze a generative and beautiful change.
Wow. This is quite a mind-blowing thing, especially having seen what I saw 4 years ago and now seeing the documentary itself. I mean, after 10 years of doing this, you must have been so excited when the documentary was released.
It was definitely a milestone. It was definitely a milestone. And I feel getting also the second and third part out, in some way my life mission has been to be able to tell this story. So yes, this has definitely been a milestone.
Betsy Paul, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sandy. It's been really a pleasure to be here.
So that's the story. You can go and watch the movie at vimeo.com/on-demand/story-of-everything. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. I'll be back again with another edition of What Is Going On at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.